श्याम सुंदर गोपा गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंद राधे कुंड गोवराम की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भगवतम की जय गौर ऑल ग्लोरी श्री गौरंग जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय अद्वैत चंद जय गौर भक्तवृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय अद्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्तवृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय द्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्तवृंद
श्री
वंचक प्रतिदिन हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे राम राम राम. So I didn't realize until quite some time after I put this class together that today was Shivratri, because I don't usually do class on the weekends. And I would have enjoyed spending the whole class talking about the glories of Lord Shiva, but as the number of verses that we cover each Chaitanya Charitamrita dance day is usually in excess of 10 or so, and as this wasn't noted as a... It's not working? You know? Nobody's ever told me I'm not loud enough. Make me look. All right, is that better? All right. And as this wasn't noted as a festival class, setting aside the regular topic and just on the subject of the celebrated topic, I will simply present this handful of prayers to Sri Mahadev. And for those of you who may not be clear on why we should worship Lord Shiva, I mean, after all, he's just a demigod. I would suggest reading the first section of Brihad Bhagavatamrita. After reading that, you will have a very clear understanding of Lord Shiva's position, as these verses indicate. Ohe Kshetrapala Shiva Tumi Doyamaya Krishna Bhakti Dehamaya Hayuda Sadaya. O Kshetrapala Shiva, protector of the Dham, you are certainly very merciful. Being kind to me, please give me love for Krishna. Varamika Vrinam Tapi Punat Kamam Varshanat Bhagavat Achutam Bhaktim Tat Pareshvara Tatatvayi. O Shivaji, Shankar, you are completely free of desires. You therefore fulfill the desires of your devotees. Seeing you, I am offering this prayer. Please fulfill my desire. Let me have unflinching bhakti to Krishna. Vaishnavanam yata sambhu. Lord Shiva is the chief amongst all the Vaishnavas. Srimad Gopishwaram vande Shankaram karunamayam Sarva klesha haram devam Vrindaranya rachipatam. I offer my respectful obeisances to Sri Gopishwar, who is merciful Lord Shiva himself. He removes all troubles and grants spiritual love in Vrindavan. Sri Krishna Vaishnavanam tu prema bhakti vivardate Krishna bhakti vasasaravashi rudrananu kampaya. When Vaishnavas observe Shivratri Vrata, their loving devotional service to Krishna becomes greatly enhanced by the mercy of Rudradev, who is always ready to shower his mercy upon the devotees of Lord Vishnu. So tomorrow we'll hear much more from our Pran Govinda on the glories of Lord Shiva. Today we will discuss the continued topic of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. I'd like to open with these prayers to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Shakala Vaishnava Sunikai Ekamana Chaitanya Krishna Shastra Mata Nirupana. I request all my Vaishnava readers, this is Kaviraj Goswami speaking, I request all my Vaishnava readers to read and hear with rapt attention this narration of Sri Krishna Chaitanya as instilled in the revealed scriptures. Charita Hamrita Ekka Srila Chaitanya Vishnu Subhadam Abhashtu Nashi Shadhayashvayadhyadhyā Tad Amala Pada Padme Bringatam Etasoyam Rasayatira Samuchai Prema Madhu Vikam Puram. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is filled with the activities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. It invokes all good fortune and destroys everything inauspicious. If one tastes the nectar of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita with faith and love, I become like a bumblebee tasting the honey of transcendental love from their lotus feet. So, very wonderful prayers glorifying this particular work. Now, one may look at an author who glorifies their own work and kind of, yeah, all right, you'll fool yourself, aren't you? But in this particular case, the prayers of glorification are themselves filled with such humility and such direct conclusion as to the importance of Chaitanya Charitamrita that one cannot but look at them and feel encouraged. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami does request a couple of things, rapt attention. He requests us when we hear the Chaitanya Charitamrita to hear with rapt attention. This means we should want to listen more and more and more. And then he points out that not only hear it with rapt attention, but the hearing of this Chaitanya Charitamrita invokes all good fortune. And it destroys everything inauspicious. Of course, in this age of Kali, everything is inauspicious. There's very little auspiciousness left in this age. And good fortune, everyone's looking for good fortune. Everyone's trying to do something to better their situation in life, materially, spiritually, family-wise, economically, whatever. And by hearing Chaitanya Charitamrita, that comes about. Now, one may be a little dubious of this, but as Prabhupada says, Vijayarajan says, the proof is in the pudding, you know. Taste the honey on the inside of the jar. And here again, a little stipulation from Kaviraj Goswami. If one tastes the Chaitanya Charitamrita, with faith and love. Faith and love. Prema Madhuvika Puram. Then he becomes like a bumblebee tasting the honey of their lotus feet. Now, no author glorifies their work and then concludes with such a line as this. So humble that if you like hearing about Chaitanya Charitamrita, oh, I take the dust of your feet on my head. Even though I've spoken so many pastimes that I've heard from the other devotees, and that I've been requested by the devotees to present, if you get faith and love from hearing them, I take the dust of your feet on my head. Not the dust, the honey of love that is at the feet of such a person who appreciates hearing Chaitanya Charitamrita. So we can see that we have quite a high standard expected of us if we want to develop prema by hearing Chaitanya Charitamrita, but every opportunity, every facility is there for us to do so. So we're continuing in reading. This is Madhyalila. This is the instructions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatan Goswami. And quite interesting that this is considered one of the significant and very important sections of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, because it is the direct instructions Mahaprabhu gives to one of his, without any question, two most important disciples, followers, members of his army, and that is Sanatana Goswami here. Of course, as we know, Sanatana Goswami wasn't able to get away from his external entanglement as quickly as Rupa Goswami was. But he had these instructions here that were given to him by Mahaprabhu that, you know, really helped soothe that situation. So, 127. Dui Chandra Supikana Jini Manasudapana Se Dui Purna Chandra Jani Lalate Ashtami Indu Tahate Chandana Bindu Se Eka Puna Chandramani. A little bit better than I was a few decades ago. I remember, I've told this story 100 times, I remember being in Sridhar Mayapur at the 500th anniversary celebration of Mahaprabhu's appearance. I had just come off of Padayatra and I was asked to give the Chaitanya Charitamrita class in front of a room full of Bengalis. And I began to chant the verses, and I saw them all look at each other and just shake their heads. So I apologized to them and then continued on. Prabhupada encouraged all of us.
So you went to Chiru Charanapadma
Sin, yeah, yeah. Opposed to sin, meter, yeah. Translation. Krishna has two cheeks that shine like glowing gems. Both are considered full moons. His forehead is considered a half moon, and the spot of sandalwood there on his forehead is considered a full moon. None of these verses, until the very last one, have a purport, so I'm left to try and give some insight into them. I ask your blessings to do so. The subject matter here, of course, is the opulence and sweetness of Lord Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his summary of this 21st chapter, notes that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this chapter is fully describing Krishna Loka, fully describing the spiritual sky, causal ocean, material world, the innumerable universes that are there as well. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then moves on from there and describes Lord Brahma's interview, we could say, with Krishna at Dwarka, and the Lord curbing, Lord Brahma's pride. We know that Brahma became a little, on a number of occasions, a little full of his position, power, and circumstance, and whatever, something maybe some of us do. And Krishna, being very, very kind to him, squashed that. This is the benefit of becoming a devotee of the Lord. So the Lord has our best interest at heart. So when we surrender to him, when we take up the path of serving him, from time to time it may be required that he puts his thumb on us a little bit, just to, as we say in our own lingo here, boil the milk. And so in this way we can become more purified and more attached and advance along the path of devotional service. In this chapter, we find that Kaviraj Goswami again is presenting very nice poems in the forms of these verses about Krishna and Krishna's super excellence, beauty, as Mahaprabhu is describing it. And the concluding part of this chapter, which we'll come to, describes the sambandha, the intimate relationship that one can and should develop with Krishna. Now, through these first few verses in today's study, we see that there's a very remarkable and beautiful presentation taking place. And that is that the detailed descriptions of Lord Krishna's beauty are being explained by Mahaprabhu. Now, a little bit of an anomaly in one sense, because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself, as mentioned in these verses here, and as we all fully understand, he is Krishna himself. And when one speaks an appreciative glorification of themselves, here again, as we mentioned, like Kaviraj Goswami does, glorifying the book he's presenting, it's often distasteful to hear someone sit in a particular assembly and glorify themselves. We see this quite commonly now amongst so-called leaders of the world. It comes off as being arrogant and inappropriate. Yet, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has not appeared as Swayam Bhagavan. He hasn't appeared as the Supreme Personality of Godhead with six opulences in full. He's appeared instead as Gupta Bhagavan. He's hidden himself in the guise of a devotee. Of course, not much hiding. I mean, devotees are very similar to the Lord in the sense that they have many of the same desires and activities like this. So, you know, he's hidden himself in this way. And therefore, his glorification of himself, Krishna, is fully acceptable. So he's taken this role, which is like an actor on a stage, as Srila Prabhupada would say. And very few personalities were aware of this role, of who actually was behind this appearance. During the Mahaprakash Lila, sometimes Mahaprabhu would call a different devotee and reveal certain features of his supremacy, of his being Krishna, being non-different than Krishna. Prabhupada mentions in the same way that occasionally a person will take up a role as an actor, and the child may see that, you know, there's someone on the stage, but they don't recognize that person as their father. Those others who are a little more informed and a little more mature, whatever they are, there's so-and-so, he's performing such a role. I've told this story a few times too, but it's so endearing, I like to tell it again. Back in the day, Gaur Purnima was celebrated, we would have the Gaur Purnima talent show. And different devotees would come forward and do different presentations, and yours truly was the MC. And so now we'd like to have so-and-so-and-so come up and do a nice bhajan gaur. Okay. Now we'd like to have so-and-so-and-so come up and do a nice recitation. And so they tapped me on the shoulder, and Bhakta so-and-so, I can't remember what the Bhakta's name was, now wants to make a presentation. So I turn around, I see this individual that I don't recognize. He had a baseball hat on in the temple and all like that, yeah, or whatever. So I introduce, and so Bhakta so-and-so will now do something. I wasn't even sure what they were doing. And the person stepped up one of the little platform we had here, and everybody broke into laughter. And I'm trying to figure out what's going on here. And everybody is just having a good laugh at it. And then I kind of look at this person like, I think I recognize that Korta. Looks a little familiar. I have a Korta just like that. And then I look a little closer, and I realize that standing there in front of me in full disguise is my dear wife, who has put her hair all up in a baseball hat, put on a dhoti and a kurta, drawn a little stubbly mustache and, you know, beard hair like she hasn't shaved, and has come up in this way, and that's the presentation. Now, many other persons saw it, but like that young child that doesn't notice her father, I didn't recognize this was my wife there. Anyway, this became great fun. There's pictures of this, and it was quite entertaining. So, my point being that Mahaprabhu could speak in this way, glorifying Krishna, even though he was Krishna, because he had hidden himself. He had taken a role of showing how to glorify Krishna as a devotee. And further, he had taken the position with Sanatana Goswami as a guru. And it is the duty of the guru to give glorification of and instruction on how to both worship and see Krishna. So in this way, the very practical and functional duty of the spiritual master and of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the role as spiritual master to Sanatana Goswami. Now, in this first verse here, we see many references to the full moon as an example of the beauty of the moon, how it's very pleasing. Now, the use of the moon as being the pinnacle of beauty, this is very well presented throughout, you know, literature and verse since time immemorial. William Shakespeare noted the beauty of the moon. He said, "My lord, they say five moons were seen tonight. Four were fixed, and a fifth one did whirl about the other four in a wondrous delight." What exactly that's pertaining to, but the point is that the moons are being used to give some example of the beauty. Emily Dickinson, Longfellow, all of these different, a host of other writers and poets and, you know, throughout time, they've given the comparison of the moon as an example of beauty, as an example of tranquility. But here, the comparison of the moon to the beauty of Krishna is actually giving the moon glorification. And that it becomes exalted because it is used as the reference point for the beauty of Krishna. Full moons, half moons, we see the beauty and the peacefulness associated with the moon is doubled when it's compared to the shiny cheeks of Krishna. So, you know, they're both just very satisfying and pleasing to see. I remember when Nittai Gaur Nataraj and St. Louis were installed, the day that we installed them, I have photos of that day, and they don't look exactly so happy. I mean, they're, anyway, they're there. 6 months later, I have photos the same way, and their cheeks are very full and big smiles. So these full cheeks are a sign of great pleasure, happiness. When we see a little child with full cheeks, we know they've either got a mouthful of food that they're very happy to have, or they're growing and filling out very nicely. Well, the description of Krishna's cheeks as the full moons, not only the full moon, but Purnachandra mentions that the other phases of the moon are included in this full moon. So all aspects of the moon are there by the beauty of these two cheeks. And then the half moon is noted as the forehead. And then the third comparison, Chandana Bindu, the sandalwood spot that is placed there. By there, we know the indication is the forehead. So these three, excuse me, these three references to the full moon and to the face of Sri Krishna are being used by Kaviraj Goswami to help us understand, to help us understand the beauty that is representative of Krishna. Verse 128. Karanaka Chandarahata Vamsi Upara Jara Akari Nata Tara Gita Madhuriratana Para Naka Chandragana Tale Kari Artana Nupurena Dvani Yaragana. So Karanaka, the nails on the hands. Translation. His fingernails are many full moons, and they dance on the flute in his hands. Their song is the melody of that flute. His toenails are also many full moons, and they dance on the grounds. Their song is the jingling of his ankle bells. So what do we have there? That's 10, 20, 20 full moons, and then with the two cheeks, that's 22. So many full moons. You know, when we have one full moon, like we recently had a full moon, and you know, we see that full moon, it's just so satisfying. Imagine so many full moons in the sky. So the first words used here are karnaka. So we're used to hearing this word naka. We hear it daily, but we hear it in a different setting. Shila tanka nakalaya. So the nails that are used to cut the chest of Hiranyakasipu, they're considered to be like a chisel on stone. Stone's very, very hard, very solid. It doesn't waver. But if you take a chisel, you can chip away at that stone, even though it's so, so solid. So the nails of Lord Nrisimhadev are considered to be like a chisel on that stone heart of Hiranyakasipu. But here, we get a different understanding of the karmaka, the nails on the hands. The Lord, the nails of the Lord are considered like a marketplace of dancing moons on his vamsi, on his flute. A marketplace, so what's that? Chandrahata vamsi. A marketplace of full moons on the flute of the Lord. Such poetry is just so amazing. Now, from our early days as a young devotee, we studied the nectar devotion. The temple I was in, we had classes every day on the nectar devotion, Monday through Friday. Excuse me. And from the Nectar Devotion, we see that Krishna has different types of flutes. And there are prominently three types of flutes that Krishna plays, although there are so many, but prominently. One is called the Venu, one is called the Murali, and the third one is called the Vamsi. Now the Venu is a very small flute, not more than 6 inches. So 6 inches is not so long. And you can imagine it gives a very high-pitched, very pleasing type of sound. And it has 6 holes in it as well, one each inch of the way along there. And it gives a bit of a whistling sound. The Murali is about 18 inches long, and it has a hole in one end and then 4 holes along the body. So a little bit of a deeper sound. And the sound that this particular flute produces is considered to be the most enchanting. Really captures the mind. And then the Vamsi flute is about 15 inches long, so a little bit over a foot. And it has 9 holes in the body of it. And this produces an even more pleasing and satisfying sound. Now, amongst the Vamsis, there's a subcategory, and this is a longer than regular Vamsi. So this would be like 18 inches. And this is called the Mahananda or Sammohini. But there's an even longer version. It's almost 24 inches long. And that's called the Akarshini. But there's even a longer version, which is called the Anandini. And this Anandini is the one that's most pleasing to the cowherd boys. They relish hearing this particular flute. And technically, it's got the name of Vamsuri. So these flutes, sometimes they're decked with jewels, sometimes they're actually made of marble, very fragile. Sometimes just hollow bamboo. We see our Krishna Kishore Prabhu, he comes to the kirtan with his tube of flutes, and they're all different sizes and thicknesses and diameters, and all make different sounds. And listens to the so pull this one out. I'm always amazed how he knows. This one complements. So all of these different types of and sometimes they're made out of only jewels. We can only find this in the spiritual world. And then, of course, sometimes they're made out of solid gold. The card from the song, they're made from gold. So, at any rate, these are the different types of flutes that Krishna carries in his hands, which have 10 full moons dancing up and down the flutes. Now, if it's the little 6-inch one, it's just a little bit, but if it's the longer one, you see, so enchanting to see the fingernails moving up and down the flute like this. This is one of the descriptions being given here. Now, regarding the Padanaka, this is the nails on the toes of the Lord. These were the nails on the flute fingers. There's a beautiful verse in the Bhagavatam that glorifies the fullness and the reflective nature, like the moon, of the nails of the Lord. It's from the 3rd canto, 28th chapter, verse 21. The luster of Krishna's toenails, which are brilliantly prominent, resemble the light of the moon. If a yogi looks upon the marks of the Lord's soul and on the blazing brilliance of his toenails, then he can be freed from the darkness of ignorance and material existence. When we come before the deity, we're recommended to not first look directly at the deity, but to look at the lotus feet of the deity and work our way up. This is comparative also to studying the Bhagavatam like that. So this looking at the toenails of the Lord frees one from the darkness of material existence. This liberation is not achieved by mental speculation, but by seeing the light emanating from the lustrous toenails of the Lord. So you get, scholars and yogis. I had an opportunity the other day, to read a scholastic presentation of a devotional topic. I won't say the presentation itself was real devotional. It was extremely academic, and my head was spinning by the time I was through. I knew the subject matter, but I couldn't, you know. So sometimes that type of presentation, just like the yogi trying to achieve something through his own understanding, it just doesn't work. But something as simple as looking at the glowing toenails of the lotus feet of the Lord completely gives one satisfaction. So in other words, one has to first fix the mind on the lotus feet of the Lord if he wants to be freed from the darkness of ignorance in material existence. This is in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Referring back again to the nectar devotion, there's another description in the nectar devotion of the Padanaka, the toenails of the Lord. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the nails of his toes are beautified by the light emanating from the jeweled helmets of the authorities of the Vedas as they bow down to his lotus feet. Not only are the toenails themselves effulgent, lustrous, as it says, but they're so effulgent that when the authorities of the Vedas, who themselves wear crowns, which are bedecked with jewels, bow down, their crowns reflect off of the toenails of the Lord. Inconceivable. Next we have the Nartana Nupura Dvani, the sound of the tinkling of the ankle bells. Now, there are various references that we can find in Shastra of hearing ankle bells. In the third canto, 22nd chapter, we have the story of Visvasu seeing Devahuti playing on the roof with the balls and hearing her ankle bells. The story told me is that the vision of Devahuti playing ball on the roof of the palace was so distinct that the Gandharva Visvasu was bewildered by her beauty and by hearing the sound of her ankle bells, and became captivated by the sound and beauty and from them. Now, we have also from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's own associates, one Abhiram Thakur. Abhiram Thakur is an amazing personality. You know, you can spend two or three classes talking about Abhiram Thakur. He defied the very meaning of an avadut. I mean, the things that he did. At any rate, we'll fine tune it for this way. You know, sometimes devotees, they have these. I got contacted the other day by some devotees that found a bunch of stones in a drawer in a house where a devotee previously lived, and they, you know, are these shilas or whatever. And so sometimes the question comes, this is a shila, this is not a shila. Well, Abhiram Thakur had a sure way of knowing. He would offer his obeisances, and if the stone split into half, then it wasn't a proper shila. So he had that ability to test the shalagram, we can say. One day he came and he met with Raghunandana Thakur and embraced him, and the two of them fell into a mood of ecstatic love. And by contact with Abhiram Thakur, Raghunandana Thakur began to dance in great feelings of ecstasy. Now, this dance was called Udana Nritya. And he was jumping so high in the air. Sometimes we see devotees during kirtan, they jump high, but then I had this one friend, Rishikesh Ganga, disciple of Indradumna Swami. He's very tall to start with. He's probably almost 8 feet tall. And when he jumps in the air, he jumps another 8 feet. So, but Raghunandana Thakur was dancing even higher than something like that. And while dancing in this way, and of course dancing that high includes spinning, and one of the ankle belts that he wore, he did wear ankle belts. He was a Dvadasa Gopal, one of the 12 cowherd associates of Nityananda. They all dressed as cowherd boys, and cowherd boy activities as well. One day I'm going to do a class just on the 12 cowherd boy associates. I've been saying to do that for a while. At any rate, he was dancing so high with such ecstasy and swinging that the ankle belt on one of his ankle belts flew off some 4 miles into the distance. So what's up from here down to across? And it landed in a place called the Kaihata. And this was near the house of his own disciple, Krishnadas. And it landed in a small kundu that was there. And so that place came to be known as Nupura Kundu, the pond of the ankle bell. So in this way, you know, we have the glorification of ankle bells as being very, very important in remembering the different pastimes of the Lord. Verse 129, we're moving along a little slow, my apologies. Nashi Makara Kundala Netra Lila Kamala Vilasa Raja Satana Nachaya Brihu Danu Netrabana Danu Guna Duikana Nara Mana Laksha Vidhitaya. Krishna's face is the enjoyer king. That full moon face makes his sharp-shaped earrings, and lotus eyes dance. His eyebrows are like bows, and his eyes are like arrows. His ears are fixed on the string of that bow, and when his eyes spread to his ears, he pierces the hearts of the gopis. Kaviraj Goswami is so amazingly poetic. Vilasi Raj. Vilasi Raj. Krishna, the king of enjoyers. That's a good name for a devotee. Vilasi Raj. Servant of Krishna, who is the king of enjoyers. So again, we have the full moon here, and the emphasis is on the Makara Kundala. Kundala, of course, you know, means earrings. Makara means the shark. So Krishna wears these beautiful shark earrings. I remember that Radha Govinda had this incredible pair of shark earrings that each section of the earring was, it had like 20 sections, they were all inner, just moved back and forth, it was just beautiful. So they're considered these two Makara Kundala, shark earrings on the each side of the full moon. So not only are they beautiful earrings, but they're more beautiful due to enhancing the full moon face and smile of Krishna. And this seems to make the earrings dance. They must have also had different sections. See, when Krishna's moving his head and dancing, they're going back and forth like this. The description of weapons of death is completely the opposite of those same weapons here. Generally speaking, the bows and the arrows, they're normally used by such persons as Murgari the hunter, or describing the prowess of archers like Arjuna or Ekalavya. But here, the description of that so-called weapon is used to describe the same effect. It's a weapon, and the arrows from that weapon are piercing. But the act of so-called aggression of the bow and the arrow enter into the heart of the gopis, but it has the same effect. It does away with their other life. When Narottam was a young boy, it was instructed at his name-giving ceremony that astrologically he should stay away from water. It's going to be his downfall. So his father would never allow him to go to the Putney River. They wouldn't run in the bank on the Putney River. You live in Alaska, you're never allowed to go to the springs. No springs for you. So at any rate, in the same way here, we see that the weapon here, these arrows, they're being shot from the eyebrows, from the eyes, from the ears, the whole description there. And they pierce the hearts of the gopis so that they give up their other life. Nothing except Krishna. And this is the description of their impact of these weapons of destruction. So, e chandarara batanata, pashara chandara hata, vini mule vilaya nija mrita, kohan smrita jyotishmite, jan akanhara adhara mrite, Sabha Loka Kari Akhya. The dancing features of his face surpass all other moons and expand the marketplace of full moons. So we had a marketplace just a couple of verses ago of 22 moons. Now that's being expanded. Although priceless, the nectar of Krishna's face is distributed to everyone. Some purchase the moon rays of his sweet smiles. Others purchase the nectar of his lips. Thus he pleases everyone. Though this world that we live in is material existence, it's the world of have and have nots. The nature of material life is that I don't have such and such, I want such and such, I can't afford such and such, so now I must work like an ass to get it because I can't give up the desire to have it. And we see that the mass wealth of the world is, as they say, the so-called 1%, they have it. They determine how it's spent. And then we look at the bottom rung of the financial inequality of society, and we see a completely divided structure. No one is happy. Doesn't matter if they have all the wealth or if they have no wealth, no one is happy. But here, Chandrahata, the marketplace of the full moon of Krishna's face, is Vilaya Vini Mule, distributed without a price. So all these people hankering for so many things in this world, whether they're whether they're the wealthiest, whether they're the poorest, they're hankering, but they can't get what they want. Either because they don't know how to be actually happy despite their wealth, or because they don't have any means of what they think will bring them the wealth, they don't have to worry. Because the beauty of Krishna's full moon face is distributed without price. You can imagine going into that. I think there was, if I remember my 60s history correctly, there was a thing in San Francisco called the Digger Store. And it was there was a group of social, do-gooders called the Diggers, like a hippie group. And so it was a store, and it was a free store. You came in and you took what you needed, you left some money if you had money, or you left something if you wanted to exchange, whatever. So we can imagine that the marketplace of Krishna's full moon face, the beauty of that face, surrounded by the mukhara earrings and with all the things, there's no price to get it. It's free. And it's often said that one's ability to purchase an item, if you have to ask what it costs, then you can't afford it. Right? I'll go into a store. Oh, I might like to have that. I wonder how much it costs. Well, that means that you're already calculating. I've only got so much in my pocket. If it costs more than that, I can't have it. So if you have to ask, you can't afford it. But here, you don't have to ask because there's no price on the beauty of Krishna's face being made available. And it's the kanhare. It's available to anyone and everyone. No restriction. If something's free, there's no restriction. Who can go in? You know, not everybody is going to be able to go in and shop at, I don't know, say Saks Fifth Avenue or Bonwit Teller or whatever these places are, you know. Or what's the one in London? Anyway, these big places. So not everybody can go in there. But here, there's no need to worry about it because everyone can purchase because there's no price on it. And as with any type of marketplace, some are going to want one thing and some are going to want the other. Not everybody goes into the store and goes to the same exact aisle. Some aisles are very well shopped and some aren't, but everybody's got different things they want. That's why stores are so big. So here, some people, they want Krishna's lips. Some people, they want Krishna's smile. Some people, they want the full moon beauty of his face. But no one goes away unsatisfied. Krishna's beauty is going to satisfy God. Just like In the department I work at, we have a display that has over 150 different types of shower heads. Only in America, huh? 150 different types of shower heads. And over 200 different varieties of faucets for your bathroom sink. And it's just staggering. And even with that, I get the occasional customer coming, can I help you? And they look and say, is this all you've got? Yeah, I mean, what do you want? Well, I don't know, but I don't see it here. Total dissatisfaction. That dissatisfaction is not found in the beauty of Krishna. Everyone is satisfied when they come to Krishna for seeing his beautiful face. Now, speaking of marketplaces, we can't not mention Nittai's distribution of the holy name in the marketplace. Bhaktivinoda Thakur tells us, what is the price of the holy name? Shraddhavana Janahe. Shraddhavana Janahe. Those who have faith in the holy name, faith in the words of the sadhu, the shastra, and the guru, that is the price. That faith. Only those persons are allowed to enter into this marketplace. They can buy, they can sell the holy name. Sri Nityananda requests that these faithful persons, those who have developed faith in the holy name, please come, come and take it, take the holy name. Sri Nityananda Prabhu says, this is the order of my Lord, my Prabhu, my master. Therefore, I have come to your doorstep, O brother. I am a beggar. And what am I begging? I am begging for these alms. Just say the name of Krishna. Just worship the name of Krishna. Just accept what Krishna has taught us. These are the alms that I'm begging from you. So the holy name is also described in the same beautiful way as the beautiful facial features of Krishna. There's a marketplace where there is no price for it, and everyone gets what they want and goes away happy. And then, of course, the final line of this verse, Sabha Loka Kari Apayayita. All people are pleased. Now, if you've been in retail as long as I am, you know nobody's always pleased. The customer is, there's always going to be some customer that's not happy. But in the marketplace of Krishna's beauty, in the marketplace of the holy name of Nittai, everyone goes away pleased. Nobody is disappointed. So this alone should encourage us to want to take up this process, because we won't be disappointed. verse 131, I'm going to skip that. Krishna has two reddish, widely spread eyes. They are the ministers of the king, and they subdue the pride of Cupid, who also has beautiful eyes. That face of Govinda, which is full of happiness, is the home of the pastimes of beauty, and it is very pleasing to everyone's eyes. So in this verse, we continue with the scene from the previous verse about the beauty and how satisfying it is. We know how proud Cupid is of his unquestioning ability to bring everyone into submission with his arrows of love. Even amongst the non-devotee world, this idea of being submissive to the arrows of Cupid is there. And he's quite proud of his own beauty and quite proud of his ability to do this. Yet, the reddish eyes of Krishna and the beautiful face, they conquer and please even Cupid. Very beautiful. A little youngish child, and you know, wings and cute little curly hair and little chubby and such, you know, enticing beauty. But even he is pleased when he looks at the face of Krishna. So Krishna's face is not only satisfying, you know, us, the gopis, but even personalities that are already proud of their own beauty. Verse 132. If by devotional service one gets the results of pious activities and sees Lord Krishna's face, what can he relish with only two eyes? His greed and his thirst increase twofold by seeing the nectarian face of Krishna. Due to his inability to sufficiently drink that nectar, he becomes very unhappy and criticizes the Creator for not having given more than two eyes. So there's three very important points made in this verse here. The first is that we've been reading about this beautiful face of Krishna's, but who's qualified to see that face? Who gets to see it? Amile Pune Punjapale, one who has gained the results of many pious activities through devotional service. So by executing devotional service, we qualify ourselves to get the darshan of Krishna. This is the understanding. Just anyone doesn't get immediately to be in Krishna's association. So by that practice of devotional service. And then secondly, what happens when we get that result? Krishna lobha bhava. One becomes very greedy, one becomes very thirsty for more and more and more and more. Sometimes you see devotees come in and they taking darshan of the deities and they just stand there for like, you know, Prabhu, it's been 3 hours and 22 minutes and you're finished yet. Because they can just absorb the beauty. They're so thirsty, so greedy to just see this form of Krishna. So this is a second thing in this. And then the third thing, and this is very, very important. The nature of material life is to find fault and criticize everyone and anyone. Anybody that happens to be on social media, you know this to be a fact. It doesn't matter who says what thing, somebody else is going to say something contrary and start an argument, and it's going to go on and on and on because nobody has anything better to do with their lives. But much, if not all, of such criticism is based on false ego and misplaced desires for hankering and lamenting. That's why one engages in criticizing like that. Yet here, the devotee properly faces this criticism he has at the feet of the Creator. Two eyes? Really? That's all I get? Only two eyes? So the example is given, if one is going to criticize, you have to place that criticism at the proper place. Namely, in this case, the Creator. Two eyes? So the next verse expands on this. When the onlooker of Krishna's face becomes dissatisfied in this way, namely that he only has two eyes, he thinks, why didn't the Creator give me thousands and millions of eyes? Why has he only given me two? Even these two eyes are disturbed by blinking, which keeps me from continuously seeing the Lord's face. Thus, one accuses the Creator of being dry and tasteless due to engaging in severe austerities. The Creator is only a dry manufacturer. He does not know how to create and set things in their proper place. So the criticism of the Creator continues, but it continues with a suggested correction. Okay, first of all, you only gave me two eyes. I don't know what you were thinking. And now you made them blink. So that diminishes the amount of time that I can stare at the Lord till my heart's satisfied. So, I mean, two eyes and they blink, I don't get all the time. Let me make a suggestion here. This is the person, the devotee speaking. I understand that you've done this because you're so dry in your heart from so many austerities. You know, Brahma's the only one in the universe, he hears the sound of tapa, he sits on the lotus flower, there's nothing else around, there's no kirtan going on, you know, and he's just, you know, performing these austerities to be able to create 8,400,000 different species and all of them and so on like that. So, all right, I understand it's made you a little bit dry. And you had to do all these different austerities. But, as we know, if one performs too much austerity without devotion, they become a little hard in the heart and their compassion for others becomes stifled. So, here the devotee suggests, if you really want to do this, should have given me millions and thousands and millions of eyes. That way I could see Krishna all the time. Now we did have one personality that did get such number of eyes and it proved to be greatly difficult. The next verse. The Creator says, The Creator is saying, let those who will see Krishna's beautiful face have two eyes. Just see the lack of consideration exhibited by this person posing as a creator. So the devotee's not only criticizing the result of the work, but criticizing you say you're creative, but this is the best you can do. If the Creator took my advice, he would give millions of eyes to the person who intends to see Krishna's face. If the Creator will accept this advice, then I will say that he is competent in his work. Now, on one hand, this reeks of false ego. Listen, I know how this should be done. Everything that's been done before me is wrong. Here's how it should be done. But in this case, because the ultimate goal is to always see Krishna, the criticism is well placed. And it's not just done for the sake of complaining. You know, this is false criticism, just whining about something. But here a suggestion is given. Okay, this is incorrect. Here's how it can be corrected. And this is exemplary. If one has some criticism of the way something's done, then they have to offer something better, something constructive. As they say, don't just complain, come up with a better idea. verse 35. The transcendental form of Lord Sri Krishna is compared to an ocean. A particularly extraordinary vision is the moon above the ocean, Sri Krishna's face. An even more extraordinary vision is his smile, which is sweeter than sweet and is like shining beams of moonlight. While speaking these things with Sanatana Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to remember one thing after another. Moving his hands in ecstasy, he began to recite a verse. Now, this brings us back to the point that all of this glorification is coming from the very lips of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. For some time, my wife and I lived on Fort Myers Beach. Literally, the Gulf of Mexico was our backyard. Had a 30-foot glass closed porch. It was literally right, I mean, from here to that end of the room, you were in the water. So sometimes you'd see the moon set over that vast water. It's just such a beautiful sight. So this is being used as a comparison. A dull comparison, a small comparison, as to how beautiful Krishna's face is, just like the beauty of the moon setting over the water. And even sweeter than that is the smile on his face. So Mahaprabhu is describing all these different pastimes. And as he's speaking this to Sanatana Goswami, who, as we can no doubt imagine, is in rapt attention, as he's speaking this to Sanatana Goswami, he remembers a verse. Now, this was often the case with Mahaprabhu. He would remember verses and recite them. And this section of Sanatana Shiksha is starting to wind down as Mahaprabhu presents his verse. Madhuram, madhuram, vapa asya vibhur. Madhuram, madhuram, vandana madhuram. Madhu gati mridasmit etat aho. Madhuram, 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 madhuram. Oh, my Lord. The transcendental body of Sri Krishna is very sweet, and his face is even sweeter than his body. But his soft smile, which is the fragrance of honey, is sweeter still. And there's a purport here. And in the purport, there's one sentence, and it's quoting this verse, which is from Vimalamangala Thakura's Krishna Karnamrita. So in devotional service, we're accustomed to hearing the statement, perfect, most perfect, more perfect, most perfect. And this is being used to describe how Krishna presents himself. Elsewhere in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is there. And then, of course, this verse that's being quoted from Vimalamangala Thakura hones in on the word madhu. Madhu, of course, means honey. All honey is sweet. We were fortunate to perform Abhishek for Chakalishwar Mahadev this morning, and we used some very nice honey. And I was thinking, is this the sweetest honey? But anyway, all honey is sweet. But there are different levels of sweetness in honey. For instance, honey actually has a ranking score of how sweet it is. And the highest level of sweetness is what's called locust honey, locust flower. And it's a European type of honey. It's got a sweetness score of 121 points, which is considered very high. And then there's Tupelo honey. Some of us are familiar with that. That has a sweetness score of 119. And surprisingly, sage honey. Sage honey has a sweetness score of 117. Gilberry, I'd never heard of gilberry. The sweetness is 116, as is sunflower and eucalyptus. Eucalyptus honey, I've never had you. These are the top 10 sweet blends of honey. And then there's citrus, and then finally a variety of alfalfa blends. So these are different levels of sweetness in honey, starting at 115, going up to 121, 22. And this indicates the degree of sweetness you'll find in this honey. But the degree of sweetness we find in Krishna's face is beyond all of this. And then the degree of sweetness in Krishna's smile is beyond all of that. So we can conclude these verses that we've heard about Krishna's beauty with the understanding that Krishna's body is sweet, that his face is more sweet and that his smile is most sweet. And you know, this understanding we have Yuba Mangala Thakur to thank for. And this is from verse 112 of his book, Krishna Kathamrita, Akarnamrita, Krishna Akarnamrita. So these are different pastimes that are being given to Sanatana Goswami by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu after some period of more introductory instructions, one could say. As Prabhupada says, it's not that we immediately jump into the Rasa-lila. You know, first we qualify ourselves by the rudimentary understandings. Nectar devotion is very exemplary in this regards. The beginning of nectar devotion is all about the principles of adhering to devotional service and accepting the spiritual master and advancing. And then the latter portion is examples of devotees who have advanced at these different levels. So here we're having a wonderful description afforded to us of the beauty of Krishna's face. And as we go through our day and we see different things that we happen to think, oh, that's very nice. Oh, that's very beautiful. We can remember, yeah, but it shades in comparison, completely fails in comparison to the beauty of Krishna's lotus face surrounded by his sharp earrings and the sandalwood dot on his forehead. So I've run a bit over time, my apologies. A lot of verses to cover. Thank you all very much. I'm going to skip questions, I guess, because it's a little late. So thank you very much for listening to Chaitanya Charitamrita, and may you be blessed to remember Chaitanya Charitamrita throughout your day. There's actually a very wonderful recording of Srila Prabhupada chanting Chaitanya Charitamrita verses. It's the Adi Lila, and you can find this online very easily. It's my go-to sound vibration for going through airports. Just Prabhupada in the back of your mind chanting these different slokas. Just chanting the sense of the Bengali slokas. Now, of course, Bengali was his native tongue, what to speak of his devotional tongue. And so, very, very nice opportunity to hear this in Prabhupada's own lips. So, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.